This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Thank you so much for making us part of your day. Coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine, and we'll talk more about how this quarterback matchup is a look into the future. But before we do all that, let's get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Go!
Well, yesterday on the show, Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports joined us, and he said this about the future of the quarterback position in the NFL.
I don't know if it's just got to be Mahomes and Lamar. There are some great young quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Like, trust me, the league would love nothing more than Kyler Murray to be a bona fide star. And after reviewing his tape the last 2 weeks, I think we're headed there. That guy's going to have a huge season. No matter what game he's in or what or who he faces, he is always the fastest man on the field. He's an amazing player. Russell Wilson is still young enough to probably play for another decade or close to it. You know, there's some great young quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson, that we worry about the organizational structure around him. And then even more, Sean, Trevor Lawrence is going to be a star. Justin Fields, people in the league I talk to love him. The quarterback position is in great hands in the NFL. They want more of the, like, Brady Manning thing. They want that again, but I think now, because of the way offenses have really evolved, you don't just have to rely on it being just Brady and Manning. I think the hope is that there's multiple matchups that can loom out there like that.
C-Dot, how strong is the future of the NFL with so much young quarterback talent out there?
I think what we're seeing with the position is it's just starting to evolve, where the generation before us, we saw maybe the best pocket passer that the league has ever seen, with guys like Drew Brees, guys like Tom Brady, guys like Peyton Manning. We saw the height of what quarterback play could look like in the NFL. I think we could see the same thing for this next generation. It's just going to look a lot different. I think now you need to have an athletic quarterback. I don't think you need a mobile quarterback. I don't think you need a running quarterback. Like, I wouldn't consider Pat to be a running quarterback, but you need a quarterback where when everything breaks down, he's athletic enough to be able to go out and make a play, and he's athletically gifted enough that he can make elite level throws on the run. Like, I think the game is starting to shift in that way, and I think you're starting to see two guys who are at the forefront of that. You've got two very different styles, but two very dynamic and elite dangerous players.
Yeah, we talk about all the great quarterbacks in the NFL under the age of 25, Rob, and the truth is most of them are actually in the AFC. I would say the two best quarterbacks in the NFC right now are Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, and those guys are far from young. Certainly, you got to put Dak Prescott in that conversation. Certainly, got to put my guy Kyler Murray in there. But look at the AFC. All these guys under the age of 26 years old, Pat, Lamar, Deshaun, Joe Burrow, Tua. You can even throw in Justin Herbert that we just saw, Drew Lock, a couple of guys in the division. So I'm with Therese. I think there's a chance that we've already got the Brady in the Brady Manning matchup, and his name is Patrick Mahomes. He's already been to two AFC championship games and won a Super Bowl. Now, see that we're trying to kind of find who that Manning is, and it looks for all intents and purposes that it could be Lamar Jackson, but can we really say that before the guy wins head-to-head against Patrick Mahomes? Huge game on Monday night, and an even bigger opportunity for Lamar Jackson.
Two.
Well, we all know how tremendous both Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are, as you mentioned, but Sean, do we give either of them enough credit for totally changing our perception of the quarterback position in the NFL?
I don't know that it was those guys that changed our perception of the quarterback position. I think that it's been probably the last four or five years since the quarterback position has really changed and the numbers have gone up and we've seen the mobile threat. I mean, honestly, Rob, if this was 15 years ago, I don't know if these guys get a crack at playing in the NFL, because we've seen a lot of great college quarterbacks that can do multiple things. Think about a guy like Tommy Frazier back in the day at Nebraska, but nobody's ever talking about him in the NFL. And then 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't know if there was one guy that hit first or if it was just kind of a change in philosophy when it comes to the quarterback position, CDOT, but the quarterbacks now, all those guys that I just mentioned, they all play a similar style of football now, some better than others. Lamar can run better, Pat can throw better, but they can all do both, whether you're talking about Pat, Lamar, Deshaun, Burrow, Tua, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. I just think that the position has changed the last handful of years, but I don't know if that's a direct correlation with Patrick Mahomes.
I think it's changed because I would say that NFL offenses have changed. Their philosophy has changed. The spread got so big in college football, and there was such a pressure for you to get that quarterback on the field and win immediately, that instead of forcing college quarterbacks to fit NFL systems started adopting college plays and college tactics. I think that's what's changed it more than anything. And I would say, due to the rules, and if you're going to have increased athleticism, you're, to me, just seeing the 2.0 of great players that we saw before. It's like, when you watch Patrick Mahomes, he is a younger, faster, better version of Aaron Rodgers. The same way that technology gets better and how your iPhone doesn't get worse, it gets better. That's how I look at quarterback now. The rules have evolved in a way where Patrick Mahomes is a more dangerous version of Aaron Rodgers. When you look at Lamar Jackson, he is an improved player over Michael Vick. If you look at Michael Vick's running, Lamar Jackson is a more effective runner than he is. If you look at how he is as a passer, he is evolving in a way that Michael Vick never did. So I would say, more than anything, the changing of the perception was this generation is able to take advantage of the rules and take advantage that NFL offenses are willing to adapt to their play style.
And I would say the Chiefs and the Ravens have done that better than anybody else, and that's what puts them in the position that they're in. It's one thing to get Patrick Mahomes. It's another thing to draft players to put him in the best position to win or to build your offense around him. Think about Baltimore, CDOT. Is there a player in the league? Is there a player in the history of the world that plays the quarterback position more opposite than Lamar Jackson, than Joe Flacco? Those guys have completely different skill sets, but Baltimore, as soon as they turned over the quarterback position to Lamar Jackson, they also changed their philosophy, they changed their style, and they built the team around him. You're exactly right. We've seen a lot of great college quarterbacks that haven't gotten the opportunity. It's the job of the NFL team to build the team around the quarterback.
Three.
We'll now know the entire story with why Tyrod Taylor did not start or play in the Chiefs game on Sunday. He had his lung punctured while receiving a shot. Earlier today on Get Up, Marcus Spears was shocked to hear that's how he got his injury.
Man, I've seen 1,000 shots administered in locker rooms before a game, and I have never heard of this happening. So I just don't understand how it gets to this point with a doctor that is doing these on a major basis. Players get painkiller shots every Sunday. Like, it's not just Tyrod may not, but my point is every player, every guy that's been in the league has either seen or been a part of taking shots to kill pain. But to hear that a lung was punctured just blew my mind. I mean, the first thing I thought about was, how? Like, these dudes are professionals and people can make mistakes, but you get to a point where you're like, dang, man, it is something you have administered over and over again, and you punctured a lung doing it?
CDOT, is it fair, now knowing how Taylor got the injury, for him to lose his job because of it?
No, it's definitely not fair, but I would say that life is fair and the NFL is no different than that. It is a dog-eat-dog world. Drew Bledsoe lost his job due to injury, and we have never looked back, and Tom Brady became the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. I do think it explains why Anthony Lynn was so defensive over Tyrod Taylor. It's not like Tyrod lost his job or got injured just on a football play that you can say it happens. his own team is responsible for his injury. Like, I feel bad for Tyrod Taylor on a very personal level. I think the plan in Cleveland was to have him start for a year. He got hurt. Baker Mayfield took over. He's been the starter ever since. The exact same thing could potentially happen here in Los Angeles with Justin Herbert. I'm going to be really curious to see how Herbert plays this week against Carolina, a defense that you can absolutely score on. Herbert now has film. A team can study his strengths and weaknesses, and they're going to break down a lot of the good and bad things he did against the Kansas City Chiefs. How does he adjust in game two? That's one of the storylines I'll be looking forward to this weekend.
It is crazy from Tyrod Taylor's perspective. He was willing to go out there and tough it out with a rib injury and try to keep his starting job. And because of an incompetent team doctor, who must have been Dr. Dre, the needle actually punctured his lung, so he wanted to play. The reason he was getting the needle was to inject so he could pain tolerance, and it ended up causing much more pain. So, yeah, it's absolutely crazy to think. It's one thing, see that, like you said, to lose your job because of an injury. It's another thing to lose it essentially because of malpractice. And I wouldn't say anything about a doctor if I didn't have Exhibit A, Russell Okung, Exhibit B, Keenan Allen, Exhibit C. Like, how many guys on the Chargers this year and last year have gone down to ask the question, what in the hell is going on out there with their medical staff?
Four.
Well, we haven't talked much about it, but the Chiefs will face a familiar foe in Marcus Peters on Monday. We all know the reasons why it didn't work out here, but Sean, considering Peters' talent, could he be a difference maker in the game on Monday night?
I actually don't know all the reasons why it didn't work out here in Kansas City. I feel like everybody thinks they know, but I'll be honest. I think that it was kind of a bunch of different things on the field, off the field, contract, and they just decided that he'd look better in a different uniform. As he pointed out earlier, it worked out okay for both sides. Baltimore's now really good. The Chiefs are the champions, and they got Juan Thornhill in a roundabout way out of the deal. So it worked out all right, but I don't think, we can pretend like he was just an okay player here in Kansas City. In 45 games, he had 19 interceptions, 55 passes defended. He helped this team win a bunch of football games. And when he went to Baltimore, he made them a better team. And it's not like Baltimore was that scared to give him a contract because they gave him, what I tell you earlier, $25 million plus in guaranteed money. In fact, it was $30 million in guaranteed money. So I think that Marcus Peters could have an impact on this game. And I think that he's a guy, because of all the quote-unquote stuff that happened here in Kansas City, on the field, off the field, we forget how good he was. Good's probably selling him short. He was great in Kansas City.
I watched or rewatched the Christian Laettner documentary on the 30 for 30. And Coach K, of course, gave a great quote. If you have a fire, it can do one of two things. It can heat up your house or it can burn your house down. That's how I feel about Marcus Peters. There's no denying the talent of Marcus Peters. But I would say the same way that his personality is the same way that he plays. He makes a lot of plays at the football. And sometimes he comes away with the football, and he does it more so than a lot of other people. We also see him get picked on a lot and teams throw at him. You remember that same Marcus Peters was getting absolutely cooked by Michael Thomas. And you remember Sean Payton specifically said, we targeted Marcus Peters because we knew we could take advantage of him. But you can also test Marcus Peters enough, and he's going to make one or two plays that can ultimately swing the balance for the Baltimore Ravens. I think in this game, it can go one of two ways. I wouldn't be shocked that Marcus Peters had a big interception and a play that helps Baltimore win the game. I also wouldn't be surprised because the Chiefs know the weaknesses of Marcus Peters more than any other team in the league. They absolutely take advantage of that and turn his own aggression against them. You got to think about it. The key of beating Patrick Mahomes is to be patient, is to stay patient. That's what San Francisco did. That's what the Chargers did defensively. If you're going to be over-aggressive against Patrick Mahomes, that seems like a really easy way to get beat deep by Tyreek Hill.
If anybody's got to stay patient, it's the Chiefs. It's the guys in the red uniforms, because everything that you're talking about rings true for Lamar Jackson also. What do we always say about Chris Jones? He's not great at stopping the run, and sometimes he gets out of his gap, and he's a little bit too aggressive trying to get the sack. You can't do that in this game. What did we say the first couple of weeks about the Chiefs? They were missing tackles, right? They don't have a great linebacker out there. Well, I don't think that changed between last Sunday and this Monday. So if anybody's got to stay home and be patient, yeah, it's certainly the Chiefs, but certainly the Ravens with Marcus Peters and those dudes, but it's also the Chiefs. This is one of those games where Lamar can beat you with his arm. He can beat you with his legs. You just can't let him do both. And I know that's easier said than done, but if I'm the Chiefs, the only way that I think that they win this game comfortable is the following. You get off to an early lead. you make Lamar Jackson one-dimensional. Because right now, he's the most multidimensional football player maybe that we've ever seen. You could argue, is he better with his arm or is he better with his legs? And there's not really a right or wrong answer. He led the league in touchdown passes last year with 36. He only had 9 interceptions, and he ran for over 1,000 yards. So he's great at both of those things. See, now what the Chiefs have to do is get an early lead, which is something they haven't done recently, and limit Lamar to either running the football and having that big game, 100-plus yards, or throwing the football, but you can't let him do both. And if I had my way, I'd make him beat you with his arm. His arm is good, but I think that if he's doing both things at the ability that he's capable of, that's the way the Chiefs lose this game.
Yeah, I may be on the other side of this argument when it comes to Lamar Jackson running the football. I think everything that the Baltimore Ravens do is predicated off their ability to run the football and establish their tempo. I looked this up earlier today because I was really curious to see kind of what the numbers were. When Lamar Jackson throws over 30 times, the Ravens are 3-2 in those games. If this is a game that is played where Lamar throws the ball 35 times, I think that plays right into what Kansas City wants to do, and that means that Baltimore wasn't running the football effectively. I also looked up whenever Lamar Jackson runs for 70 yards. Just 70 yards. Just a good day. Not a great day, but you know with how often they run the ball, you know he's going to break maybe one or two in the game, 70 yards. They are 14-0 when he runs the ball for 70 yards or more. Everything that their offense does is predicated on them running the football effectively and then getting you to bite. Think about all the RPOs, all the play action stuff. It is getting you to bite and overcommit to when they're going to run the football, and then they're going to hit you down the field with Hollywood Brown, or to get you to overcommit on Mark Ingram, and then they're going to hit you with Mark Andrews over the middle of the field. I hear what you're saying about Lamar's arm. I think he's underrated as a passer, but I think everything he does as a passer is predicated off how effectively they run the football, that you have to respect it. And that's why whenever you get off to a good lead against them and you force them to throw the football and you take away that threat, and then you can defend Lamar straight up, he's not nearly as effective. You always have to account for the run with him. Once you eliminate that, he becomes a very average quarterback.
I guess I'll just ask this then, and I don't expect you to have the answer because the Chiefs obviously don't have the answer. Why does a team with this much talent keep burying themselves early? And if you do that coming up on Monday night against Baltimore, I'm not sure, even with the horses that you have and the quarterback that you have against this particular team, that you can come back. It's one thing to do that against the Texans or the Titans or the Chargers. It's another thing to do that against the Ravens, who don't look now, have won 14 straight regular season games. It's crazy that combined these two teams have won 22 straight regular season games, but I just can't put my finger on it. It doesn't make any sense why the Chiefs have gotten off to such slow starts.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Going back to what we were talking about for hit number one, about the quarterback future of the league. And I went back and I listened to the Therese interview from yesterday, and he was talking about how the league is in good hands and how the league is starting to transition and have some of those really good young quarterbacks. And I think, like any profession or any business, you need certain people to kind of come around and break the mold, and you need certain people to come around and show you, hey, it can work doing it this way. I remember back to whenever the Chiefs were making a decision on what they wanted to do with quarterback, and it was very obvious that they were going to draft a quarterback. We all were debating, do you want Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson? A big reason why I wanted Deshaun Watson, aside from what we saw at Clemson and against Alabama in the national championship game, was there was no track record of Big 12 quarterbacks working in the NFL. They had tried them. There had been great college players. There had been mediocre players. There had been players who got really good pro grades. None of them had worked at this level. These were the quarterbacks in the Big 12 who were drafted in the first round before Patrick Mahomes: Vince Young, Josh Freeman, Sam Bradford, Blaine Gabbert, RG3, Ryan Tannehill, and Brandon Whedon. Big 12 quarterbacks for a 21-year span did not work in the NFL. And I was fearful of that with Mahomes. I liked the physical set. I just didn't know if it was going to translate. But the league was changing, and it was adapting to a way where the quarterback styles that we saw in the Big 12, everybody's doing it now. College teams are doing it. NFL teams are doing it, that someone had to come through and break that door down. Since Patrick Mahomes, we saw Baker Mayfield go number one overall. We saw Kyler Murray go number one overall out of the Big 12. And we also think that Kyler Murray has a chance to be a star in this league. I would say the same way with Lamar Jackson. You and I grew up at a time where they told us quarterbacks like that could never work in the NFL. You could never win with that kind of quarterback.
They didn't even get a shot back in the day. It wasn't they couldn't work. They didn't even get the opportunity.
That those kinds of quarterbacks, that the college style, those routes, those concepts, the way that you run the football just couldn't work. We're seeing that's not true. Kyler Murray can work in today's NFL game. Lamar Jackson can work in today's NFL game. Justin Fields out of Ohio State, he gets drafted to the right situation. He can work. That I look at this quarterback matchup and how I think it's going to be a clear indication of the future. Not only are they the play styles that you want to have, that you want the physical quarterback, the athletic quarterback that can throw on the run and also give you that mobility. To me, you also needed guys like that to break the mold and change the perception of those kinds of quarterbacks in the league.
It's a little bit like that e-cigarette thing that I smoked, though. Like, it hasn't been around long enough to know C-Dot, the longevity and the effects 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the line. And I would say the same thing about this style of quarterback. Like, you're saying that it's been shown that it can work for Lamar Jackson. Yeah, for 2 years. So far, it's worked, and he's stayed upright, and he's stayed healthy, and he's got the MVP, and his team's been really good through the first couple of weeks. Same thing for Kyler Murray, but if we're talking about a franchise that's going to cut his quarterback $500 million the way the Chiefs did for Patrick Mahomes, I'm not sure that it's an easy decision if your quarterback plays that style of football. Now, we'll see if 4 years from now, if Kyler Murray's still healthy, and at that point he's gone to a couple of championship games, maybe won a Super Bowl, we can revisit the conversation. But the truth is, that's why it's so much better to have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes that doesn't think run first. Now, he's great on the run. He might even be better on the run than when he's standing tall in the pocket. But just because we've seen Pat more recently run for first downs and be more comfortable with his legs, he's not the same style quarterback as a Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson.
But I would also say, though, that the rules have changed in a way where I'm not saying that you're wrong. We don't know. We don't know what the next 4 years are going to look like. But I would say the fact that, and think about it, an NFL team with the number one overall pick drafted a under 6 foot, under 200 pound quarterback. If I had told you that in 1995 that would be the case, you would call me stupid. Kyler Murray looks like a wide receiver. He looks like a very small running back. It never would have worked, but I would say that the rules have changed in a way you just can't hit those players the same, where in 95 you could get physical with those quarterbacks and you can make it really uncomfortable. You can't do that anymore. Like, you can't rough Patrick Mahomes up the way you could in 1997. You keep saying that Lamar's going to get squared up. Man, we've seen a lot of Lamar Jackson. He's played, what, 30 games as a starter. How many times has that happened? Like, that's just not the way that the NFL is played. It's way more open. It is way more spread. It is way more offensive driven. And I think more of these quarterbacks are going to work. Like, I'll bet on this being the new wave, the same way in the NBA and college basketball that kids are just shooting more threes than they ever shot before. Like, that's not going back to me. Like, we're not going to go back to basketball where you got Alonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing and centers dominate the game. Like, I think this is here to stay. It might change just a little bit, but I think this is a prolonged change in the NBA. I would say the exact same way in the NFL, that the rules have changed in such a way that this is the wave of the future. You want your quarterback to have these kind of abilities.
You think most people in Kansas City would imagine that 7 years from now, 9 years from now, 10 years from now, Pat, when he's 34, 35, he'll still be the quarterback of this team, right? Like, most people in Kansas City, he's got the contract. Yeah, we're thinking there. So. And he's still going to be probably pretty good based on the fact that now guys that are even older, like we've seen guys like Ben Roethlisberger this year putting up pretty good numbers. I doubt that the Baltimore fans are thinking that far ahead because of the style that he plays. And to some extent, that doesn't matter. We're talking about what comes up on Monday night. We're talking about the next couple of years here. But from the franchise perspective, if you're talking about looking way down the line, you can't really do that with a Kyler Murray, and you certainly can't do that with a Lamar Jackson, because you say, well, he hasn't got squared up yet. It's like anything in life, man, that you say, I'm great at. Nothing's going to happen to me until it does that one time, and then everything changes.
That's football, though. I mean, I hear what you're saying.
No, but that's, that you can't. We've never seen a quarterback that plays this style of football that's lasted a long time. It's never happened. Yeah, I'm not saying that doesn't mean it can't happen, but the fact that we've never seen it, I mean, come on.
No, I hear what you're saying. I guess I would just say the same concept that you have for that could happen to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, we've seen how ACL tears can completely derail
your
career.
But he's a running back. We see it all the time with running backs because of exactly what I'm I'm saying. If you rush the ball 200 times, maybe on rush 1 or 12 or 150, you're not going to get hit. But maybe on rush 172, you do. Lamar Jackson just puts himself in the position to get hit. We had on Rich Gannon earlier, and Rich said he's not the type of guy that slides. He's not the type of guy that goes out of bounds. You know what happens to guys that don't slide or go out of bounds? They get RG3'd at some point.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. And earlier today, we had on Pete Sweeney, we had John Clayton, and we had Rich Gannon on getting you ready for Chiefs and Ravens on Monday Night Football. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. We had a very busy day today on the show. We had Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. He joined us on the show today. We also had Rich Gannon on the show. Here's what Rich Gannon had to say about what makes the Baltimore run game so good.
I think you have to start with the personnel, right? And I think, you know, you can look at the backs, the people who are touching the ball. I think you start there. And honestly, it starts with the quarterback, because, you know, they have designed runs for him. He's got runs where he just decides to pull it down and take off. You know, Mark Ingram is a old school throwback, tough, downhill, knock you backwards, physical finisher, that type of runner. You know, Edwards is a guy that can come in and do some things. But here is the key to it all. And you're not going to hear this from a lot of other people, but here is the key to their running game. They've got five good offensive linemen, big guys that knock you backwards, but they really have seven. So what they do is they bring in Nick Boyle, okay, 86. And 86 is really a glorified tight end, a tackle. He's 275 pounds, okay, and he can almost 280. He can knock you backwards. And then if that's not enough, they've got another guy that is just as big and nasty and powerful. And he plays defensive line, and he lines up in the backfield, and he's a guy that I really think is pretty amazing, because, you know, just his size. You know, you get seven big bodies on the field, and, you know, it just makes it hard. You know, so you know, they use defensive linemen in the backfield. You know, they put a lot of big bodies back in there. They get seven big bodies on the field, and they run it right at you. And so, to me, that's a big part of it. They use multiple tight end usage. You'll see two tight ends, three tight ends. They get a lot of big bodies out there, and they run it at you. And so, if you're the Chiefs, you have to get off of blocks. You have to stop the running game, because if you don't, you're going to see heavy doses of it. The way the Chiefs win this game, obviously, they got to do what they do on offense. I think they match up well, but they've got to be able to turn this into a passing game. They've got to make the Ravens be a one-dimensional. Get Lamar Jackson behind the sticks. Get him behind in the down. Get him into those third and seven pluses, and force him to sit in there and throw the ball and function as a pocket passer. To me, that will be the key to the Kansas City defense.
What makes the Baltimore run game so dynamic, so special, and so potent is they have one transcendent runner, and that's Lamar Jackson, who, in my opinion, is one of the five most mobile, five best running quarterbacks we've ever seen in the history of the league. And they have three running backs that could be a starter for just about every team in the league. Like, Mark Ingram is a top 10 running back in the league. I loved J.K. Dobbins coming out of Ohio State. He could have been a guy where if the Chiefs had drafted him in the first round, I'd have been as happy as we are with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I thought he was an elite running back in college. I think he's going to have a lot of success in the NFL. He was one of my sleepers to win Rookie of the Year. And then Gus Edwards, who is a strong number two running back. Like, if you have a running game where Gus Edwards is your fourth best running option, you have by far and away the best running game in the NFL. What scares me most in this game is the Chiefs' D-line being so banged up, the uncertainty of where Frank Clark is, not knowing whether you're going to have Alex Okafor, whether Mike Pinnell. So now think about it. No real offseason stuff, no preseason. We're now expecting Mike Pinnell to just come in here and be ready to help you against this run attack. All right. And this team has been a really bad tackling team.
Yeah.
It's okay to be a bad tackling team against Austin Eckler. it's okay to be a bad tackling team against Joshua Kelly. You know who it's really bad to be a bad tackling against? Lamar Jackson, because two of those plays are going for 30 yards and flipping the field. Where I would say in the game, if you play anywhere like how you played against the Chargers, you're not down 14-6 at half. You're down 24-6 at half, and they are running the ball down your throat the entirety of the second half.
Yeah, the run defense is absolutely a concern. I mean, you give up a buck 86 last week to the Chargers, and like you're saying, C-Dot, the Chargers aren't half of the running attack that Baltimore is. I'm looking at Baltimore's rushing numbers from last year, and I had to pull up four different websites just to kind of double-check myself and triple-check because it just doesn't look right. Last year, Baltimore rushed for, this is just crazy, 3,296 yards. Now, having a Mark Ingram and having a Lamar Jackson and rushing the ball a lot when it comes to attempts is going to help that. But they got 21 touchdowns and averaged 5.5 yards per carry. So it's not like they were just doing it a lot and having mediocre success. They were the best rushing team in the league. And to me,
no, they weren't the best rushing team. They ran for more yards than any team in the history of the NFL last year. Like the same way we talk about the Chiefs offense, where they're best in the NFL, we're comparing it to the 2007 Broncos, or not the 2007 New England Patriots, yeah, and the Peyton Manning led Broncos. You were comparing the Ravens running attack to the greatest rushing attacks in the history of the NFL. Gap discipline is of key importance. Assignment football is of importance. Ben Neiman cannot be missing wide open tackles with Gus Edwards, because the play that might go for 7 yards against the Chargers is going for 17 against the Ravens.
3,296 yards is what they rushed for last year. Just to put that into some comparison's sake, their opponents rushed for 1,494 yards, so they almost rushed for 2,000 yards more than their opponents did. So the more that I talk it out, here's what the Chiefs have to do. Lamar's going to run the football, and the Ravens are going to run the football, and you're probably not going to be able to slow them down because, like you said, the Chiefs' run D's been pretty suspect the first couple of weeks. In Baltimore, they generally have their way on the ground. But you should be able to, even with a banged-up secondary, you should be able to at least contain Lamar Jackson through the air if that's the only way that he can beat you. And the only way to do that is to get an early lead. If you let Lamar Jackson be Lamar Jackson, which means that he's the most multidimensional quarterback in the history of the game, where you can throw the ball if he has to, or he can run. Last year, led the league in touchdown passes with 36, didn't throw a bunch of interceptions, only had 9, and rushed for over 1,000 yards. The reason, C-Dot, they went 14-2 is because pretty much every defense let him have his way. Now, it's easier said than done. It's easier for me to say on the radio than it is for these guys to do it on the field. But if you can slow down Lamar Jackson's rushing attack, get an early lead, I don't think he can beat you with just his arm.
When the Chiefs are playing their best football, they force you to throw out whatever game plan you have. I'll never forget the game where they played the Jacksonville Jaguars in the game that we thought they broke them. And I thought that Jacksonville came out with a somewhat decent plan. They were going to run the ball with TJ Yeldon. They were going to run the ball with Leonard Fournette, and they were going to control the clock. And the Chiefs went out there and scored really quickly on that first drive. And after that point, I felt like they thought, hey, Blake, you got to go match what Patrick Mahomes is doing. And that's not your style. The reason why last week's game was so close, part of it is the Chiefs just didn't play well. For whatever reason, whether it's the empty stadium, whether it's playing down to your opponent, whether it's just a bad day that happens in the NFL, they just didn't play well. But the other thing is they allowed the Chargers to dictate tempo and control the way that the game was going to be. Think about it. If you're Anthony Lynn and you were sitting there up to the whiteboard and you were drawing out what your game plan would be for the Kansas City Chiefs, you did that for the first 47 minutes of the game. You just weren't talented enough to bust through. Baltimore is talented enough to bust through that. If they're getting pressure on Mahomes, if they're running the ball effectively the way that the Chargers were, they're going to create a bigger deficit, and we'll see if Patrick Mahomes can help you get out of that situation.
Baltimore's also maybe the one team in the NFL that's a more complete football team than the Chiefs. Like, Pat's a very complete quarterback, but I would say Lamar Jackson's probably a more complete quarterback because not only can he throw, but he can run. And then you think about they've got a top, let's call it top 10 tight end, probably a top 10 receiver core, pretty good offensive line, the best running game in football, stars on the defensive side, a coach that's won the Super Bowl. A lot of things that we say about the Chiefs, Carrington, it'll be interesting when we check the boxes officially coming up on our show Monday before the Monday night kickoff between the Chiefs and the Ravens. Most of the time, in fact, I think every time we've ever done this thing, the Chiefs get most of the boxes checked. I don't know if that's going to be the case against the Ravens on Monday night.
I also don't want to overreact to whatever the outcome of the game is. Like, I want my stance out here very clear. I'm looking at this like a November college basketball game. We all watched that Champions Classic early in the year where Duke plays Kentucky and Kansas plays Michigan State. And that's our first college basketball season, our first game of the year. So we get all excited. We get to see Andrew Wiggins for the first time and Zion for the first time. And we get all high on it. It has no bearing on how the end of the season is going to play. Duke, you remember when they had Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, destroyed Kentucky there. Didn't even make the Final Four. I'm looking at this like a November college basketball game. You're right. It could decide who's the one seed in the playoffs. This year, it might not matter because 25,000 people are able to go to the game. So home field advantage doesn't carry the same weight that it would. Would you love the bye? Absolutely. But we've seen this team. It doesn't matter the scenario. They're just going to find a way to do it. To me, this is about, can the Chiefs start playing Chiefs football? I don't think they played Chiefs football against the Los Angeles Chargers. I would say they showed stretches of it against the Houston Texans, but I don't think it was that dominant effort. We're the best team in the NFL. If we are solely evaluating the Chiefs based on what we've seen in 2020, they aren't one of the three best teams in the NFL. One of the four best teams. Like, they have not been one of the four best playing teams on the field so far this season. I just want to see that team. I want to see the team that we think can go 14-2. I want to see the team that you think is head and shoulders above everybody else in the NFL. I don't think we've seen that team for too much in the first two games of the season.
Well, this is going to be a hell of a test then, because this is the best team that Pat has faced, I would say, since the last time that they faced Lamar Jackson. I mean, if you want to say, well, what about one of those playoff teams? What about the Super Bowl? Tennessee wasn't a great team. Houston wasn't a great team. San Francisco is a good team, but not as talented as Baltimore. This is the game. If you're going to judge yourself and say, how much improvement have we made? Are we the elite team in the NFL? This is the litmus test, man. This is who you go up against. I'll push back a little bit on your point that you're not going to overreact whether the Chiefs win, lose, or draw in this game. The difference between your college basketball analogy, which is right. I mean, we saw Kansas a couple of years ago get their asses kicked. Kentucky beat them by like 50. Then they met up in the national championship game. You play twice as many college basketball games as you do football games. So just every game is more valuable. And there's four number one seeds in college basketball. The number one seed in the AFC this year, in my opinion, if it's Baltimore or if it's Kansas City, that team has such a big advantage, not the home field advantage, the bye. Only one team gets a bye this year, which makes their path so much easier. And I'll predict now, this isn't going to be any sort of a bold prediction, that whoever wins this game on Monday night ends up being that one seed. So I don't think you can overreact based on the results of this game.
Yeah, I would just say I've done this long enough with you to know. Let's say Baltimore wins this game 31-20. You are not changing your Super Bowl prediction based on this game. So again, it's fun to watch. I'm taking it like entertainment. Who plays well? Who does all of that? In the end, it's going to come down to, in January, we think these two teams are going to play each other and who plays the best on that day. This game here, you were looking at two 13-3 teams, two 14-2 teams.
What if somebody gets their ass kicked? Because everybody keeps talking about how close the game's going to be. And it seems like that's what I'm going to predict. You're going to predict. Vegas is going to predict. Rob's going to predict. Everybody we've brought on.
I just don't see that happening. Like, I'm with you. It certainly could happen.
Would,
like,
would that change your opinion? If the Chiefs go out there and win this game 35-17, then will you jump on board?
Yeah, I just would be absolutely stunned if that happened. Like, it didn't happen the first two times. I actually think Baltimore is a much better team than they were the last time. I think Kansas City's better. I think Baltimore now, I think Lamar is a better passer. You add J.K. Dobbins. You didn't have him last season, and they didn't have Marcus Peters last time, so their defense got better. I'd be surprised if either team blew each other out. Like, I think this game's going to be very similar to what we saw on Sunday Night Football between Seattle and New England. Like, I don't feel different about New England because Cam didn't score on that final play. We saw two great teams that you're going to have to watch at the end of the season. So in this game, I'm not going to get too high if the Chiefs win this game. They could go out there and win 31-28. It's a good football game. You know you're going to see that team later in the season. That's, again, I'm treating this like a November college basketball game. Two good teams. Let's watch it for entertainment. But we know that you got way bigger fish to fry. You got way more important games. Doesn't matter who wins. One of the other teams is going to lose at some point, and you're going to have to try to make up ground in that game. So that's how I'm treating this Monday night football
game.
Yeah,
I think that the way that the Chiefs either win or lose is incredibly important. Like, if they lose a close game, then obviously they don't lose any of their confidence. They still internally think that they're the best team. They've got the best player and all of that. But if they either get their asses kicked, then they're going to say, okay, hold on. Wait, this is a Baltimore team that will be 15 straight regular season wins, and they will have beat you head-to-head. Or the flip side, if the Chiefs go out there and dominate this game, then they're going to say to themselves, well, we just beat a team that's won 14 straight regular season games. Now we ourselves have won. At that point, it'll be, I think, 10 straight regular season games, something like that for the Chiefs. So I don't think that it's just whoever wins this game is the best team for now. I think that if it's a lopsided contest, everybody on Tuesday morning is going to be saying, see, Baltimore's the best team. I've been telling you. See, the Chiefs are clearly the best team.
Yeah, and I just will say, I would just say that you're overreacting to the one game in week three when we all knew with no preseason games, these teams are going to get better. There's no doubt in my mind. Let's say the Chiefs lose this football game. We're gonna have this conversation in week 10 and come to the conclusion the Chiefs are a drastically improved team over where they are in week
Didn't
three.
Didn't we do this every time that Manning and Brady matched up, though, whether it was week 3, week 8, or week 10?
They always played way late in the season. You remember, they always purposely had that game. If this was a week 11 game, I'd have a very different stance on where we are. It's not. It's still September. You ain't winning or losing no division in September. You're not winning the one seed based on winning in September. You got to continue to take care of business. Who knows how injury bug bites? We know, remember, the Chiefs, the middle part of the season, and injury bug bites. Who knows what happens with Mark Ingram down the stretch? I just would tell everybody to woo-saw for this one game. I know we have all circled it. I know we have all treated it like it's the Super Bowl. You do not have the Super Bowl in week 3 of an NFL season. It's not possible.
That's true, but you can lose that number one seed this week. That's what I'm saying. Like, if Baltimore goes out there and goes 15-1 and the Chiefs go 14-2, we're going to look back at this game. My prediction is that whoever wins this game ends up the one seed. Most of the time, when you've got two dominant teams that are this close, or back in the day with, say, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, every single year, somebody goes 13-3, somebody wins 12-4, and most of the time it came down to that head-to-head matchup. And this year, because of the expanded playoffs and only one team gets the bye, it becomes so much more important, where this isn't just another regular season game. I think this goes a long way to determining if the Chiefs eventually win the Super Bowl or not.
And I think Baltimore is a good team, but forgive me for this, I don't think that they're going to win 37 out of 38 regular season games. I think they're going to stumble a couple of times. They'll probably lose to Pittsburgh at some time this year. One of those any given Sunday games just happen where you come out flat and you lose like what happened to the Chargers. I just wouldn't get too high or too low based on the outcome of a week 3 football game, because anything can change in the NFL. Things change on an absolute dime. Think about last year. There were two teams in the NFC that started off 3-0. Both of those teams missed the playoffs last year. Things just change really quickly in the NFL. Rob, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
We found out right to why Tyrod Taylor didn't play, because Dr. Kevorkian stabbed him, punctured his lung while trying to inject a pain tolerance shot. Should that doctor still be employed?
I don't know enough about it, honestly, to say. I got to get more information. I don't want to like not answer your question, but it's just very hard for me as somebody who took 10 years to graduate to get my 4 years degree to really tell you all what goes into injecting someone's chest with a painkiller. I don't know.
But you've also paid attention to football for a long time in sports and heard about these pain injection shots. Have you ever heard of a guy getting his lung punctured?
No, I've never heard of that situation before.
We had on the professor earlier today, the great John Clayton out there in Seattle, ESPN Radio. And he said that he does think Frank Clark is an elite pass rusher. You've said a few times that you do not. Why is that?
I just don't think he's ever had an elite season. Like, I don't think we can really point to consistent effort, one of those great seasons where, like, part of being an elite pass rusher is not doing it one time. It's doing it consistently. It's going out there week in, week out, year in, year out, and being that player. Like, I feel like sometimes you want to put everybody into the elite category. Some people are just good. Some people are very good. There's nothing wrong with being a very good player in the NFL. He's a guy who can get you 9.5 sacks, 10.5 sacks. We don't think anybody who gets you 10.5 sacks is an elite level pass rusher. You're a good pass rusher. Nothing wrong with that.
You know who was elite? Brett Favre. Earlier today, Andy Reid compared Pat to Brett Favre. Do you see a lot of similarities in their games?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the game. That is the gunslinger quarterback that everybody uses as an example. I made the analogy earlier. I think it's like the iPhone. Like, I think you see improvements over time. Like, I would say that Aaron Rodgers is an improved version over Brett Favre is. He's a Brett Favre that can take care of the football, can make any throw on the field, fearless to make any throw on the field, but just protects the football a little bit better. I look at Pat as being an improved version over Aaron Rodgers. I think when we're done with Patrick Mahomes' career, we'll look back and say he was a better football player than Aaron Rodgers. So I do think there's some similarities in their game.
Favre really was a gunslinger, though. Like, I think he's thrown more interceptions than anybody in NFL history.
I think we got to remove the term gunslinger. He was reckless with the football. Let's call it what it is. He's reckless. Like, Pat has a lot of the same characteristics. He's not reckless with the football.
That's what to a me, gunslinger those, is, though. It's somebody that, right, just slings it around and isn't careful with the football.
I guess to me, I guess
maybe
I would
that's
just,
what Pat is?
No, I'm saying is, so what is Pat? So if we're saying is he's not a gunslinger, because everything I think about Favre's good characteristics, I would say that Patrick Mahomes has. He just doesn't have any of the bad characteristics. So, I mean, are we creating a new category for what people like Patrick Mahomes is? Because I would say that he's a gunslinger. I just would say that Brett Favre was reckless with the football. Like, Favre isn't that much different than Phillip Rivers. Like, their characteristics are very similar. Favre just had a higher ceiling.
So how is Aaron Rodgers a gunslinger? Because he's got the best quarterback. He's got the best touchdown to interception ratio in the history of the game. How is that a gunslinger? Like, a gunslinger to me is a guy, and now we're just arguing the definition of a word, but Patrick Mahomes, it's because he went to Texas Tech. Let's just call it what it is. He went to Texas Tech, so coming out of school, that's what they called it.
I guess I would say that, to me, I think we'd throw these labels on and never give them context, and we just, like, blankly, the same way that we think everybody is Alex Smith, doesn't matter if you're Dak Prescott, you can compare it to him, or Tyrod Taylor, when their skill sets are so very different in two different players, I would say we do the same thing with gunslinger. If you can throw the ball down the field, we just throw you with this gunslinger. So you're either Brett Favre or Jay Cutler. There's no other person you can be.
Chiefs-Baltimore, the best game on the slate, of course, on Monday Night Football, but there's a bunch of good ones. We only got a minute left, so quickly, your thoughts. The Rams versus Buffalo. Who wins that one?
Buffalo.
Vegas versus New England.
I'm still going to go with the Patriots. I think the Patriots are probably one of the five best teams in the league.
Dallas takes on Seattle.
I think Seattle's one of the five best teams in the league, so I'll take Seattle.
Green Bay at New Orleans.
Green Bay goes on the road and gets that win.
Speaking of the Baltimore Ravens, is John Harbaugh the biggest and best branch on the Andy Reid tree?
Yeah, I don't really even think it's that arguable of a point. I would say Ron Rivera is probably next, but yeah, I would put him one. I put Ron Rivera two. I really like Sean McDermott. I think Sean McDermott's a really good coach.
Heat Celtics game four tonight. Who you got?
I think the Celtics tie it up here. I like the Celtics. I think Jason Tatum's playing a really high grade of basketball. I think the Celtics tie this series up.
The Heat win tonight, and then in your words, they get the gentleman sweep in game five.
That is The Drive. Thanks so much for listening. Tomorrow, we continue to be full speed ahead for Monday Night Football. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourself. Wear a mask.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.